Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the sleep-deprived voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
How are you?
I'm tired, but I'm good. I'm in a good headspace, but I'm a little bit tired.
Are you sure? It's very important to you, your sleep, isn't it?
It is. Recovery. No, I've got my app, which tells me my recovery every day and where I'm at. It's not been great the last few days, and unfortunately, it's time of the year. Pollen is to blame.
You do look a bit bunged up.
I struggle very badly with hay fever. Very, very annoying. So if anyone's got any solutions out there, please, please let me know.
What is it that makes some people struggle with hay fever and others not so much?
I wish I had the answer, Matthew. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sat here now, bunged up, feeling a little bit like death. But no, what kills me is I take the dog for a walk in the morning, take the dog for a walk in the evening, and when I take her out, it's in all the fields. I feel like I come back in, and then that's it for the rest of the night. I'm sat, box of tissues next to me, and just spending the whole evening just blowing my nose. And my eyes itch. And then when it comes to trying to sleep, especially when it's hot as well, and you get a bit hot bothered, and then I'm just about to fall asleep, and then I need to blow my nose, or I need to sneeze, or whatever it might be. Not a particularly pleasant sight. And it's been, very difficult to sleep. I'm actually looking forward to those cold, wintry days again already.
No.
Which is ridiculous. I love the sunshine. I love going out and playing golf. I love being out and about. But honestly, when you've got hay fever quite badly, I know you guys listening in who also struggle with hay fever, I'm sure they'll be very much on board with that.
Any treatment that you can have for hay fever?
Not sure. Again, if any of you guys know, please let me know. Because all I ever do is the same tablets, the same nasal sprays. I've heard of like different injections that you can get, apparently, which are very good. And I probably need to try one. But I say this, and the fact is, I get it for a few weeks every year. So, you kind of each time it comes around, oh yeah, I must do that next year. And next year comes, and I think, oh, it's only a few weeks. Just get through it. So, I'm kind of in that stage thinking that it's going to ease up in the next couple of weeks.
You're going to sneeze your way through this podcast.
I could well do. It could be a very noisy podcast.
Well, let's bring this back to goalkeeping. How do you link hay fever to goalkeeping?
How do you link hay fever? I think this might be a little bit too much of a stretch for us. Have you got anything?
I always say let's try and make this serious. It's never going to be serious when you're talking about hay fever and goalkeeping. But what about when you were in pre-season training? Did that ever affect you?
Horrible. Yeah. And do you know what? Actually, this did happen. And it was actually quite serious because I was in a really bad way where I went out for a bike ride, but this was pre-season. So we were back training, I think the week after. So I went for a long bike ride, got halfway. So I'm a good few kilometers away from home. And all of a sudden it hit me. And when I talk about continuous sneezing, literally it was just one after the other. And I couldn't, then my eyes swelled up, so I couldn't see anymore. So I got to the point like, I'm in serious trouble here. I can't see. And I just about managed to get home. And honestly, I walked in the front door and my mum like screamed because I looked like the elephant man. It was horrendous. I couldn't see. So yeah, I've never been for a bike ride since. So yeah, it does. It's the one is I play a lot of golf. When it hits you like halfway through a round of golf, and it's just so frustrating because there's, again, nothing you can do and it's just continuous. And again, I just do not know how to halt that. So yeah, it can impact pre-season.
Because when you were playing as well, it wasn't all singing, all dancing training complexes, was it? Especially for Watford, you were playing at colleges, is that right?
Early on, it was, Stanmore. It was essentially a college, We used to go and train at various schools and bits and pieces,
So the surroundings would have been pollen-y, I suppose. Yes. So did you ever get it mid-training?
From memory, no. It was always after training. Now, there's something in that. I don't know why, but it always felt like you get through training and then the second it finished, it would hit me really hard. And I don't know whether that's because then it did hit me during the bike ride. So no, I'm really not sure why, but no, it was never a case of, because by the way, that would be one. If you're about to try and save a shot and you sneeze, obviously you can't see. You know, you could imagine that will be an excuse one day that the ball goes in and you'll see the goalkeeper sneezing just before. But you can't see the moment you're sneezing. Of course, that reaction in the body, there's nothing you can do. So no, thankfully, I never had it during playing. But yeah, if you did, I mean, I'm just waiting for that day where we're analysing a goal and we see a goalkeeper sneeze at point of impact. That I am never blaming the goalkeeper if that happens.
You don't blame the goalkeeper anyway,
no, that's
ever.
True. That's true.
So this is going to be another quick podcast that we always say. We're going to very quickly touch on the two performances, one from Jordan Pickford, one from Sam Johnstone in England's two friendlies prior to the Euros, which starts next week. Buzzing for that one. Then we also are going to speak a bit about mindset going into an international tournament, Richard. We've got a few examples that we're going to touch on and just speak about psychology because we haven't done that for a bit, have we?
We haven't. Let's do it.
Okay, we'll start with Jordan Pickford, who will most likely start the game against Croatia when England kick off their Euro 2020 campaign. Clean sheet against Austria, pretty solid game.
Yeah, indeed, and one save of note that we are going to talk about, and I thought it was a very, very good save, one that you didn't necessarily see at first. I didn't see at first. It was only the replay from behind where the ball was struck where you could see that he does get the faintest of fingertips, which was, in the end, the difference between it going in and not. But the bit I liked about this was you set for the shot, and it's almost caught him by surprise a little bit. So it's the timing of the jump that was very, very good, where he doesn't go straight away, waits for it, explodes, gets good height off the ground, because it is one that is very much over the crossbar. At the point at which he gets his fingertips to it, it's a good foot or two above the crossbar, and it would have been dipping in. But the fact that he gets that faint fingertip to it and does it in such a way to deflect it and redirect it slightly upwards in the end was the difference between it being a goal and not a goal.
There was a moment as well late on in this game. I think both shots were from Sabitzer, the RB Leipzig player. But I looked at it and thought, oh, he's not done as well as he could have done there. But you spotted something that you were not happy with.
No, it's one of those. And again, goalkeepers listening in, you can all empathise with this, where he's made a decent enough save to his left. Now, it's not as clean as it could have been, of course. Ideally, you want it to be one touch. You want it to be gathered at first attempt. But it wasn't. But at the same time, it was in control. You know, it's moving a bit on him. He's gone to his left. Instead of going for a parry, he's tried to keep control of it, which he would have done knowing that he had plenty of space in front of him. You know, often you make a decision as to whether you parry or not based on the surroundings. If you've got loads of people around you, I'm sure that he parries that out for a throw-in. But he obviously goes to catch it knowing that he's got plenty of time. And then you've got the defender comes rushing in and he's very obviously saying to the defender, I've got it, leave it, it's fine, relax. And the defender comes in and smashes it away. And then at that point, it looks a mess. And of course, as you did, and as many people do, they would then say, oh, Pickford, that's a bit untidy. Which it is. And of course, you can't argue with that because, yes, he could have held it one touch. But again, being a goalkeeper, I know I've been there where you know you've got plenty of room. You're thinking, okay, I'm going to try and hold this. But if I don't, it's fine. I'll get the second ball, which he would have done. But the moment the defender comes and smashes it away, it looks a bit of a mess.
Okay, Sam Johnstone played against Romania. When you see performances like this, you think he can only do what he can do. I know that sounds really simple, but he is likely to be the number three going into the tournament. He's been given a run out against Romania and he's done pretty much everything that he possibly could have done and made a brilliant save late on.
Yeah, excellent. Low save down to his right. I thought it was very, very clean. Talk about what we just said there about Jordan Pickford, and certainly with this one down to his right, one touch, just looked nice. Nice sound as it hit the gloves as well. Very clean down to his right. Good save with his foot. Again, no histrionics, just made it look very simple. Took up a good set position. Ball came, big solid foot to get it away. And of course, then the pick of the bunch, the save to his right, I thought was phenomenal. The fact that he's got up very quickly from being down to his left, back up to his feet, but then it's the prediction to go down to his right. From that close in, it's unlikely you're going to have time to react. So you do need to guess to an extent. Using the word guess is probably doing him a bit of an injustice because, to be honest, it's, I suppose, a calculated movement. As you're coming in, you're looking at where the foot's striking the ball and where the ball is likely to go, and you try and get yourself into that point or to where you think the ball is likely to go to then make the save, and he couldn't have done it any better. You know, he's gone to his right, predicted where it's going, big, strong hand, and for it to go up over the crossbar in the way that he did, fantastic save.
He had some nervy moments as well,
according to
Alan Smith.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I didn't see that. So it's just very odd. You know, you hear some of the commentary, and again, we're not going to do a commentary corner on this one, but it's a bit of a throwaway comment. Like, if someone makes their first appearance, it's almost, oh, must be nervous. Well, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe they are. Maybe they're not. I think most players are nervous every single game they play. Are they any more nervous for their first one? Sometimes, but there was nothing that I saw from Sam Johnstone that said to me, oh, he's particularly nervous tonight. If anything, everything I've said, I thought he was absolutely spot on, very focused.
Just to quickly touch on one other performance, and that is Dominic Livakovic, the Croatian goalkeeper, plays for Dinamo Zagreb. We've featured him a few times because he's appeared in Europe this season. He's going to most likely be in goal for Croatia when they come up against England in that first game. Made a brilliant save from Romelu Lukaku, wasn't it? They lost, didn't they, Croatia to Belgium? But a great save from him.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, point blank, wasn't it? Very good save. And then to get up and make the second save as well. Very good. Well, he's going to be, you'd like to think, very busy in the game against England. So it was interesting to get eyes on him and see where he is. But no, certainly he himself put in a good performance. Good save down low to his right as well late on in the game. So no doubt, look, of course, he's going to be pumped up for the game against England to an extent. You know, England will be favourites going into that game. So it's always quite a nice position for a goalkeeper where you know, if there is an opportunity to be a hero, it is a game such as this, which will move us on quite nicely, I think, to talking about the psychological side of things when you're going into a major tournament. But certainly from a goalkeeper's point of view, when you're playing for a team such as Croatia, and this is no disrespect to Croatia, it's just, you know, factually, the bookies have got England as favourites for this game. That then does put you in a nice position, I would argue, as a goalkeeper, where to an extent, it's nothing to lose.
So let's talk a bit about mindset then, Richard. And before we get on to your views, let's hear the views of Rob Green, one of the first Patreon interviews we actually did way back when during lockdown. And it was a three-parter, wasn't it, with Rob Green? A first half, a second half, and an extra time. But we spoke to him about his experience for England and that moment against USA in 2010. Let's hear about that first, and then we'll come to you.
It transpired that it wasn't a good tournament. And it's not me sort of batting off any responsibility or anything like that. But it wasn't particularly a game where we played very well in it, it as a team for any of the games. And so you look at it, and I think the real difficulty I had as a player and chatting to other players, know this was something that was quite evident, is we'd built our identity as such on one thing, i.e. you play in your team, you play well, you get picked, you train well with England 100%, you get a chance of being picked for England. Doesn't matter who you are. And the manager will pick you if he thinks you're the right person for the job. And that we romped home in the qualifying. To then go from that to trying to recall back Paul Scholes, recalling other players who'd retired, Jamie Carragher, Ledley King, you know, and other stuff that went on. It just felt like that we'd gone away from something, and what had been particularly successful as well. And so you're turning up with a different squad to the one that had qualified, and it didn't instill confidence in the guys that were there. And also what didn't instill confidence in the guys that were there was that he wouldn't name a team. And he wouldn't name a team until 2 hours before the first game. And it just, we had a trip to Austria where we went on training, and we turned up at the training ground. They said, we're doing this at altitude because some of the games in South Africa are altitude. It turned out it was at the base of the mountains, not anywhere near the top of the mountains. It wasn't at altitude. We turned up and there was sort of pictures, great big murals of AC Milan and Real Madrid, the teams that Capello had been in charge of at the time. This is just where he went. This was his place. So if he'd have turned around and said, I love this place, this is where I go, you go, all right, you know. And it just little things like that. We ended up playing a game, as you're saying, a practice match against an all-star team, which was kind of like playing sort of Woking District under 16s or something like that. You know, it's kind of that sort of level that you sort of combine counties or Southeast counties Division One representative team. And you just on a farm pitch, and it just didn't add anything to it. And the scenario we were in a hotel in the middle of nowhere in South Africa, having been in a hotel in the middle of nowhere in Austria, you started to go a little bit, you know, as everyone is now with lockdown, sort of just gone a little bit gaga. And so the combination of stuff, like you say, it was a bit of a mess. I think Crouchy described it as the most luxurious prison he's ever stayed in. You know, it's that sort of thing. But yeah, in terms of the mistake, it was one that happened. I think technically you'd look at it, and I still remember it now. And sort of, Richard, you know that when you go try to block a ball, I'm trying to do it with my hands so you can see it, but it caught that bit of my thumb rather than that bit of my hand. Now you think, I misjudged it by that much. That's all that happened. Yeah. And that's the difference. And so, you know, and well, I thought for the rest of the game, I played quite well, really. You know, they had a number of chances. I made a number of saves. I think Altidore came on a one-on-one. I managed to get a touch on it onto the post. And I made another couple of saves. And we played really, we started off like a train and then died. And sort of, we had guys that just, we had a team, sorry, that just underperformed and came up against one of the up-and-coming teams in the world in Germany and who blew us away. So it wasn't great, and it was the such that I think what got it more so was in comparison to 2 years later at 2012, where there was no expectation. It was the expectation. You had Rio, who got injured. You had Frank. You had you know, Stevie G, Wayne Rooney. That team coming into its prime. This was this team's tournament, and it fell flat on its face effectively. So. Yeah, it was tough. It was, you know, for me, you know, you get given a chance in football, you either take it or you don't. And unfortunately for me, I made a mistake, and that was the end of my chance, you know. And so be it. That's football at times, and it's a good lesson for people that you can, you know, me boy or anyone else who's going to listen. You sit there and say, well, you can fight for something that you dream of and something that you work for all your life, and it goes horribly wrong. But you know what? You've fought for that all your life. And that's the bigger part, is that you've done what the most you can. And some things happen which, in short, are just shit. Yeah.
Do you know, I don't want to touch on that again. I suppose I'll touch on similar experience where my one was costing Watford in a playoff game against Hull. Hull ended up getting promoted, and it's that... Mm. That feeling, and it's then I didn't deal with it particularly well myself. But this is a bit I really wanted to speak to you about, was how you then dealt with it thereafter. Because as you mentioned, the actual mistake, and again, this is why we do these podcasts, and myself and Matt do a lot of what we do. And that if you break down the mistake, as you say, it's an inch. That's what the mistake is that the technique you used is a technique that I see most goalkeepers use. You stun the ball. You don't necessarily go for the scoop or the cut technique. You stun the ball down. Brad Friedel for a year, and he was an absolute master at doing it, you know. So it's the technique was fine, but it's an inch. That's what it was. And as you say, I remember the rest of the game. You played really well the rest of the game. But that one inch is then the headline the next day. So then
that's goalkeeping.
And that's goalkeeping. And that's the bit now that I take back, and I look back, and that, of course, you have no regrets, and you look at all the really tough times, they do strengthen you, providing you move through them and you find techniques to deal with that, then you become a more rounded and you take the positives and you become a better person for it. How quickly did you get over that? Was it one where, were you quite quick? Was it days, or was it one where weeks, months later, it would still play on your mind from time to time?
I think there was sort of the initial bit was the aftermath, my sort of the press harassing my family and stuff like that, sort of just going after my mum and dad, just sort of camping outside my mum and dad's house, sort of putting letters through, notes through the door of my sisters, continuously knocking on them, you know, that sort of thing. That's more difficult. You're sat in a bubble in sort of South Africa in the middle of nowhere, still involved in a World Cup, you know. And it was, you know, you had sort of girls that I'd been on a date with sort of saying, why is there a woman from the Daily Mirror just coming, sort of asking for an interview? They don't even follow football. Like, and I don't even know what's happened, but they said, they came in saying that I went on a date with you once. I was like, I'm really sorry. That's quite embarrassing. You know, that sort of thing. But I went on holiday. I was okay. We went on the holiday to, ironically, me and my now wife went on holiday to, America, and we went up and down the Californian coast, and we went and stayed in one hotel, and they get your passport, see your name, sort of. And this woman went, I saw you in the World Cup. I was like, all right. And I genuinely think she meant this in the way that, dealing with it, I fronted up and I spoke into the press and stuff like that. And he said, you were amazing. I said, well, you didn't watch a game then, obviously. So it was it was kind of funny thinking, oh Christ, it's big, because here I am in America where no one's really interested in football, but this thing is sort of has touched them. So, you know, I think the aftermath, I think the difficult thing which I suffered from more was the following season at West Ham, where it was such an emotional one and such a difficult one that it transpired so quickly that we were going to struggle. And there was very obvious reasons why we were going to struggle, and no one would do anything about it. And we sort of sat there going, as Sam Allardyce said, I think I said before, if I'd have come in 6 months earlier, I'd have kept you up. You know, and I believe that would have been true, but it didn't happen. And I think that's what hurt me more than something that happened to myself, if that makes sense.
Just one more thing on it. Am I right in thinking you only found out you were going to play that game in the morning of the game itself, or at pre-match?
Two hours before kickoff.
Which that for me, and again, and look, as you say, and I know you're certainly not one to make excuses, but I know personally, I can never understand why a manager would not name a goalkeeper the day before. And people will say, you know, and this is again a conversation I have with outfield players, but I do think it's different. But goalkeeping is a different position to any other player on the field. And to know whether you're playing or whether you're going to be a backup, for me, mentally, the day before, you're going to prepare differently. And that's not to say that if you're not playing, that you're suddenly just going to, you know, not care. No, you'll prepare as a number two. It's one of the most nerve-wracking things. I had it once at Brentford. Uwe Rosler decides to bring in me and David Button side by side, sat there waiting for him to make a verdict. It's like X Factor, you know, who you're going to choose to play. And you're both like, and you haven't been able to prepare because you're kind of nervous about what's going to be said. And then the axe comes down, you find out if you're playing or not. And then you've got an hour to prepare. I just, to me, that's nonsense. I don't know how, was that just the way he would deal with that situation? Have you got any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, the communication beforehand, in other games was good. I think it was the fear of the press finding out, of, you know, it was the worry about sort of it being leaks, and it's sort of, because it's front page news every day, isn't it, during the World Cup, and you know, they fly drones over to get pictures of the teams and who's got bibs on, who hasn't, that sort of stuff. But you're absolutely right, and it's not unprofessional, and it's not being in a sulk, and it's not anything. But you, if you are not playing, it is a completely different preparation. What's the point in completely building up nervous energy for something when you say, well, that's not what I'm going to be doing. What I'm going to be doing is needing to be focused in a different way, but relaxed, but ready. And it, ironically, it wasn't till sort of being at QPR, being a sub keeper, that I learned to relax more in my game, because of the experiences of sitting there and going, it's fine. I've not picked up a ball in an hour. That's fine. I'm ready. I'm 32 years old. I can catch a ball. I'm not going to forget. And, you know, we played Southampton, and Julio got injured. And we were, I think it was 1-1 1-1, and we were getting pumped. And he got a dead leg, and he hobbled around for 15, 20 minutes. And me and Kelvin Davis were stood chatting to each other. He's there going, is he going to come off or what? I said, he will do. He's just picking his time, you know, and the pressure get building. And he went, yeah, that'll do me. I'll come off now. And I stood there waiting, and Harry's on the side, like nervous as he does it during a game. He's like, lives on the edge, done it during a game. He's like, rah, rah, rah. And I stood right by him. I went, yes, boss. He went, right, what? I said, it's fine. Don't worry. Yeah, right, nice. And I walked on, and I think I made 2 or 3 saves in the last 15 minutes, and we scored the winner in the last minute to win the game. And you just walk off going, now I get it. Yeah, I get it. It's not being nervous. It's not being, just being confident with yourself, saying, I'm ready. And that's a very different thing to saying, right, okay, in the first 15 minutes, it might be like this, and we might be do this, you know, that sort of thing. I do feel the players like the communication. They like to be told, and also they like to be treated as adults.
So that was Rob Green there. Really good chat that was. And he was really honest, wasn't he, about that. It was one of the first times he'd actually spoken about it, about 11 years after the actual events. So mindset going into an international tournament for a goalkeeper, we're obviously meaning specifically. If I hark back to when we were kids, you think of Shilton in 1990. We've done a podcast on that as well, actually. Worth a listen. Mm. We just focus on his 1990 antics. Of course, coming to the end of his career, international career, played for many years after that, even as a 40-plus-year-old. But that was the end of his time, and he got a lot of stick for his performance in the semi-final and then that third-place playoff. You think of David Seaman, 2002, Ronaldinho. You think of Rob Green, of course, in 2010. Going further back, Peter Benetti, another one we've spoken of, 1970, West Germany, quarter-final. And then the only other example, I guess, in recent times. Is there one in recent times? It's not really, is there? Maybe Joe Hart. 2016. I know he played a few games after that, had that great game against Slovenia, didn't he, where he pulled off that incredible save from the corner. But that pretty much signaled the end of his England career, really moving forward. Didn't play at 2018, did he? So there are so many examples of goalkeepers at major international tournaments where the pressure's been on, they've made one error or a mistake or whatever it is that you want to call it, and it has not defined them, but always stayed with them.
Yeah, it's one of the unfortunate things about being a goalkeeper is that more often than not, and again, factually, statistically speaking, goalkeepers, if you were to mention or you're going to talk about a goalkeeper and talk about key moments in their career, of course, big mistakes will be highlighted. And you look at even goalkeepers, some of the best goalkeepers, and I've said this several times, and I use David Seaman as an example, in that if you would say to me, tell me, you know, your memories of David Seaman, what were the standout moments? I'd probably talk about the penalty save against Scotland in Euro 96 or the save against Pesky Salido. But you'd be amazed at the amount of people that will talk about the Naeem lob or Ronaldinho, because people do tend to remember those things. And certainly when you're in a big tournament, of course, with the emotions being as high as they are, there will be certain moments in this tournament that will be remembered forevermore. Now, look, of course, that can be a positive thing. The unfortunate thing for a goalkeeper is that, of course, more often than not, it's going to be mistakes that are highlighted than great moments. You know, maybe saving the winning penalty in a penalty shootout or a worldie save in the last minute of the final that wins you the tournament. That's very unusual. You know, the Peter Schmeichel of Denmark, when was it? 1992?
Correct.
There you go. You know, those moments are very, very few and far between for a goalkeeper. So more often than not, all the examples you gave, those big moments may well be negative moments. Now, I say that, and you know what? This is where Jordan Pickford, credit to him, of course, 3 years ago, World Cup, you'd argue that all the moments he had really were positive. There was a little bit of stick for one of the games he played, but it was in the group. And then after that, he was excellent. Obviously, penalty save in particular against Colombia, great save up to his left, very good performance against Sweden, wasn't it, in the quarterfinal. So actually he will be remembered very positively for that experience. So we hope that's the same again going into this tournament, because it is tough going into a tournament. And the bit that, now I only had a couple of experiences going away with the 21s, but I can refer to them, and this wasn't even going into a tournament, this was just group matches from memory. But one in particular, I remember going away with the 21s, and it was a good 10-day stretch that we were away for. And the bit that I realized was that, again, 10 days can feel like a very long time when all you're doing is training, sitting in a hotel, watching TV, playing computer games, having dinner, sleeping. It can feel like a really long time. So the mental side of it is a big part of it. And I do know, certainly from the last tournament, where you could see that the English lads, obviously Gareth Southgate, probably from his own experiences, knowing what it feels like to be involved in that, really brought a new identity, I guess, to the English squad. Of course, they were very engaging, weren't they, with the press, which was a big thing, and everybody touched on that. And the atmosphere did seem to be that much more fun, which I think it needs to be, because the pressure is going to be there. The players don't need to know that the English fans are hoping that maybe this is finally the time. So there's pressure there already. They don't need that. If anything, it is the other side, allowing them to switch off, creating that environment where they can enjoy their time away and it doesn't feel like a prison sentence that's broken up by a few games, which are magnified beyond belief, which in itself can make it a really tough few weeks.
I realise as well that I've basically exacerbated it there, haven't I? I've fallen into the cliche of flagging all those examples where there have been goalkeeping errors. We should look at the positives here too, and the fact that, you know, you mentioned 96 and 98 where Seaman was great, and other competitions too since then. David James put in a couple of good performances, 2004 I think it was. So there are, of course, examples where it's gone the other way.
But the point is what you've said is, I would argue, what most people say. You know, and that's the point in the, and this is where, you know, we talk a lot about the mental strength of a goalkeeper, and when it really comes to the fore is moments like this. Do you know what? Jordan Pickford going into this. This is just talking based on odds. You know, the odds are, if you were a betting man right now, and this is nothing to do with Jordan Pickford, it's just the way it is, Jordan Pickford will come out of this tournament, remembered for negative reasons as opposed to positive. And that's nothing to do with Jordan Pickford and his ability. It's just that you look historically, that is often the case, that goalkeepers very rarely come out of a major tournament with huge plaudits. And even when they do reasonably well, it gets forgotten very quickly. You know, I think David James stepped in, didn't he, when Rob Green had that game. But no one really talks about David James coming in and doing a solid job for a few games. No one cares. But yet they'll talk about the Rob Green moment over and over and over. They'll talk about the David Seaman moment over and over and over. So that's, again, to have that mental strength, which in fairness, I think Jordan Pickford does have. He's already been through so much, and that's where he'll be well-placed for this, in that, look, whatever's thrown at him, he's always bounced back. He's always stepped in for the next game. He's never shied away from any criticism that he's got, and he's always put himself forward, which is where I give him massive credit, because, look, it can be very easy for a goalkeeper to fade into a background. You know, very easy for a goalkeeper to suddenly become a number two, and it's a much easier life in terms of no criticism, no real spotlight on you, but, of course, you don't then get the major highs that you get of playing in a major tournament. And that's where I do think Jordan Pickford is well suited for this.
Always helps if you win the game as well, doesn't it? We go back to 2018 again in the World Cup final with Hugo Lloris and the goal from Mario Mandzukic, where he dispossessed him on his six-yard box. I mean, that would be considered a monumental error, but France win the game 4-2. It is never spoken about.
Yeah, or if it is, it's kind of almost a bit of a it's almost a bit of an aside. You know, people do touch on it, but they don't say too much because you say they won the game, which is mental when you think about it. It's completely, to an extent, unrelated to your personal performance. And we say it all the time. You can have your best performance and lose 5-0. You can have your worst performance and win 5-0. You know, there's only so much that a goalkeeper can do. But you're right. When you win the game, it is forgotten. Every moment you've mentioned, of course, England lost every single one of those games, hence why it's magnified even more. And we've all been there during a game. You make a mistake after 5 minutes and you're praying that the team can come back and get a draw, get a win, because you know it gets swept under the carpet. And the truth is, we're all going to make a handful of mistakes every season. Sometimes you don't know when they're going to come. You can go into a game feeling fantastic. You've reached your optimal performance state and yet you make one of the worst mistakes you've made. Again, this is where it's in the lap of the gods to an extent. We don't know whether the next few weeks are going to be a series of games where Jordan Pickford has the best few games of his life or makes a monumental error or somewhere in between. You just don't know. And that's partly the beauty of football, but also where you need the strength of mind to deal with uncertainty. And that's one of the biggest things as a goalkeeper. You don't know what's going to happen. Same with any outfield position, of course, but goalkeeper, I'd argue even more so. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if the wind's going to alter a shot that's taken towards you. You don't know if the referee's going to make a dreadful decision. You don't know if your defender, as I mentioned in the game that just happened, is going to run and smash the ball away from you when you have it in your grasp. There's so much as a goalkeeper that you cannot control. We talk about control the controllables. There's so much you cannot control. This, again, is why the psychological part is arguably more important than any other aspect of the game for a goalkeeper.
And this is also, to finish on this, I suppose, where the goalkeepers' union really comes to the fore. Of course, it's always there, but is it magnified at an international tournament between 1-2-3, the goalkeeper coach? We saw before those penalties against Colombia with Jordan Pickford, he was stood there with Jack Butland, with Nick Pope. There was some really serious words from Jack Butland. There was a bit of laughing, a bit of joking as well. They'd obviously all worked on this. He had the water bottle from Margetson as well. In an international tournament, is the goalkeepers' union just magnified that little bit more?
Yes, I think so. And I think you'll find that. Look, we don't know what's about to happen over the next month or so, but I think you'll find that in that something will happen in a game, whether it's an England game or a game elsewhere. And no doubt that debate will flare up again. You know, the commentators will say whatever they say, the pundits will say whatever they say, and no doubt we'll be on here defending goalkeepers, or not even defending, but just giving a more objective point of view. Because it is, for a goalkeeper, for all those games that you play during the season, even at Premier League level, which is, of course, you know, certainly the most watched league in the world, but, you know, for that Tuesday night that you have where you play wherever you play, and really it's not highlighted in quite the same way, and if you do make an error in that game, it's forgotten quite quickly, they will know that any error made in one of these games doesn't get forgotten quite so quickly. But similarly, although I say there is more chance that it ends negatively than positively, and again, I'm just saying this based on the odds of what might happen, there is that chance it can end positively. And I think it's that for any goalkeeper. You know, we spoke a lot about Kasper Schmeichel saving the FA Cup final. You know, those magic moments that are out there. Again, it comes back to that belief that maybe this tournament will offer that for someone. Now, whether that's Jordan Pickford or someone else, of course, we hope it's Jordan Pickford. But it's also the kind of thing that if it does go your way and you end up winning a tournament, that pretty much cements you in the book of legends. You know, we've seen it over and over and over. And we know that someone will get welcomed into the Hall of Fame.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Finally, we forgot to mention this at the start, didn't we? The England game yesterday against Romania. And the goalkeeper, Florin Nietzsche, I think is how you pronounce his surname, saved a penalty. From Jordan Henderson. What was going on there?
Yeah, this you weren't pleased with this, were you?
Not at all. No,
I could tell. Look, I'm going to talk about it from a goalkeeping perspective. Good. I thought it was an excellent save. Really good. He's read him. Interesting technique he had on saving the penalties or trying to save the penalties. Firstly, Marcus Rashford, fantastic penalty. This is exactly the Ivan Toney technique. I don't know who coined it first, whether it was Rashford or Toney, so I'm sure they can fight that out between
Lyle
them.
Taylor would stake a claim as well, wouldn't he?
Yes, Lyle Taylor. True. It's one of them. I don't know. I'm guessing it must be one of those three that have taken this technique on initially, where you essentially walk up to the ball, wait for the keeper to move. But you know what? The goalkeeper, he's tried so hard not to move as well. And this is what I mean in terms of it being the hardest penalty to save, where he's waited, hands behind his back as well, which is a bit random.
That's the key thing, hands behind his back.
A bit random. Again, I mentioned you try different things, and he certainly tried to stay completely still, hands behind his back, waiting for it to be struck before it moves. But naturally, you're always about to go. It's so hard to stay completely still. So the second he moves, of course, Rashford puts it in the other corner. However, with Jordan Henderson, it was a simpler penalty save. That's the truth. It was a good penalty in terms of it is going in the corner. I know you'll disagree with me there, but it's a decent enough penalty in that Jordan Henderson's done exactly what he meant to do, which is put it in the corner. But of course, he had already decided what he was going to do. So then the goalkeeper can go very, very early, knowing that he hasn't necessarily got the talent that Marcus Rashford's got when it comes to taking a penalty. So he's been able to go very early, decided to go into the bottom corner, read him perfectly, and it's an excellent save.
Yeah, it was a good save. I really wanted him to save that. I'm an England fan. I want England to do well. Of course I do. But when I saw Jordan Henderson step up for that penalty, I just thought, what on earth are you doing? This is a major international tournament, a build-up, a friendly to a major international tournament. It's not jumpers for sodding goalposts, for crying out loud. Don't you think? You've got a big C on your arm, so you are the captain, so you take responsibility, and that responsibility is that you are not the penalty taker. I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin had the ball in his hand. Now, if this was something that was pre-agreed, absolutely fine, but Calvert-Lewin with the ball in his hand would suggest that it wasn't. I get that you've never scored an international goal, but you haven't played for 3 months. It doesn't matter that you haven't scored an international goal. You are the captain of your country. That's what matters. Lead. Lead by example. And if he's saying, yeah, well, I'm going to lead and take the penalties and I'm going to score the penalties, great, if you score them. But we all knew that he wasn't going to. The last time he stepped up, he had a penalty saved against Colombia. So that's two on the bounce for Jordan Henderson. I just could not believe that he had the audacity to step up and think that he could take that penalty.
And I can't disagree, really. I think it's a strange one in that, for instance, there's normally thought behind what happened. Sam Johnstone played because now what you've got is you've got three English goalkeepers that have all played. So actually, if Jordan Pickford does get injured, you've got confidence that one of the other two can step in and it's not going to be rabbit in the headlights. They're going to be fine. So there's thought behind that. So I understood why Sam Johnstone plays. I'm sure that Dean Henderson is still considered the number two, et cetera, et cetera. For this one, you then look at it and think, is there any thought behind this other than, I suppose, a selfish motive?
Ego.
Yeah. And I can't see what the other, because if anything, the Dominic Calvert-Lewin taking the penalty would have made sense, because if Marcus Rashford isn't playing, then more than likely he may be the next one to take a penalty. So who knows? It could be in the first or second game where we get a penalty and it's up to Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and he hasn't had that practice in the near history of doing it for England. So that could then end up being a bit of an issue, you know, because realistically it's not going to be Henderson taking a penalty in a game. The only time he would is in a penalty shootout, but then it's not just Henderson, it's a whole host of other players that are also in the same position as Henderson. So realistically, they're going to be getting their practice in a training session. So yeah, I get it. And I've got to be honest, I'm of a similar mindset. I guess in that moment, rightly or wrongly, he's seen it as a game that doesn't necessarily mean all that much, you could argue, and thought this is an opportunity where I can break my duck and get on the score sheet. But what that would have changed in terms of the bigger picture, I don't really know.
I guess as well, listen, look, we'll talk about goalkeeping. I've had a bit of a rant there, haven't I? Got a little bit angry. Haven't done that in a while. Felt quite good.
Yeah, actually. Beat a rant, yeah.
Did that, does it sometimes, I don't know, does it work in the goalkeeper's favour? When you see that little commotion before a penalty where one's picked it up and then the other one's picked it up, do you think, oh, yeah, that's going to be in his head?
Yeah, because you know instantly there's more pressure on the taker, especially when they've forced it out of their hands like that. It's a case of, okay, you need to score now, mate. If you don't, you're going to get some stick, which he has. So yeah, of course. And I think as well, I always go back to like the type of player taking a penalty. And, you know, I've given my thoughts before on this, whether it's a player that smashes it down the middle or a player that has a corner, they decide early and always go that corner and go that way. I much preferred facing penalties against players like that. Whereas when you're facing the likes of a Rashford or, as we spoke about, a Tony or a Lyle Taylor, etc., yeah, I used to find it near impossible. So I'm sure the moment that switch happened, knowing the type of player and having a bit of an idea as to what Jordan Henderson will do on a penalty, no doubt gave him a bit of a boost.
Okay, lovely stuff. Anything else to discuss? No major goalkeeping transfers over the past week?
It's been quite quiet, surprisingly. There's still so many goalkeepers that are out there that are out of contract and so many teams that are looking for goalkeepers. You feel like June and July, in fact, June, July, August, still got plenty of time, I guess, but it is going to be a lot happening because there really are a lot of goalkeepers out there that are still unattached. So no, nothing major this week. My gut says we might have one or two to talk about next week.
Perfect. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast between the sticks. Keepers.
Away. Oh,